Hello, AF Nation, and welcome to another episode of Arena Football Radio's AF Nation podcast. We are entering week 20 of the regular season. One last bite of the sandwich before we go into the dessert, which is the playoffs. With me today, as always, is the lovely Christy Rose, Mikey Wansifer, and then we'll have Connor Gomer coming later, and then we're making a call to the bullpen and bringing the lefty out, Liz Wentz. Some results from Week 19, another exciting week. We had some playoff implications going on during Week 19 and also just some straight great games. To start off the week, we had Cleveland knocking off Jacksonville 62-20. After that, we had Orlando and New Orleans. The game went into overtime. Orlando came out victorious 70-64. We had Pittsburgh and Iowa going down to the wire as well. Pittsburgh coming out of that one with a win 59-56. San Antonio ending their long losing streak by knocking off the LA Kiss 72-65. Philly keeping their playoff hopes alive by defeating the San Jose SaberCats 42-20. Arizona getting back to their winning ways after their first little losing skid since 2012, defeating Portland Thunder 65-55. And then the last game of the week featured Spokane and Tampa Bay in Death Valley. Spokane came out of that one 55-52. Tampa Bay did need the win there, but they're playoff hopes are still alive. I'm going to bring back Mikey and Christy to go over some of the top storylines coming out of Week 19. Right now, first probably would be the Orlando Predators clinching the South Division, and with that, the number two seed in the American Conference. So, Christy, it's kind of been a tumultuous year for the Orlando. You know, they've had some ups and downs. As we saw, they just got a new owner. So, right now, it's nice to see that they're back in the playoffs, you know, a historic franchise.
Oh, definitely. Well, they've kind of studied at their quarterback position for a while. They went back and forth between Boltis and Morris. Now they've settled on Morris, who had a great game.
Morris is kind of underrated, having a really, really good stretch. I mean, at least just down the stretch, he's been playing elite football.
Yeah, I mean, he had 6 touchdowns in the last game and a big win that they definitely needed over a pesky New Orleans team. So I think this is huge for them, but it sets them up for a tough matchup against Pittsburgh. So that'll be interesting to see how that test them in the playoffs. But
yeah, I mean, they had a classic back in May. It came down the last second.
62-61.
Yeah, Grady had that last second touchdown to Hank Edwards with like a second left on the clock. So,
right.
I mean, we're going to have a nice
It'll be a fun match.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, Bernard Morris had 3 rushing touchdowns last week, which that might be the most for an AFL quarterback this season. That's just something he's really deadly with. Is just once you get sort of near on the red zone of the AFL, that's kind of where a lot of teams struggle, and it's really easy to turn it over there. But when you have someone with his legs, and Bernard Morris, he's just a tremendous rusher, and he has 9 combined touchdowns the last 2 weeks. So I think with him at quarterback, they're a completely different team, and they're definitely going to be a deadly team come playoff time.
Yeah, as Eric Meyer demonstrated last year, you know, the ability to run and throw effectively is just something that can really kill defenses in the Arena Football League, because, you know, you're going to get some pressure, and as we've seen with guys in L.A. and Iowa, you know, they just haven't been able to escape that pressure because they don't have the athleticism. But with a guy like Bernard Morris, his offensive line lets him down, he's able to
make a play out of it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then the other big storyline is the last playoff spot available, the last wild card spot in the American Conference, is still up for grabs. Philly and Tampa Bay are the two teams that are in contention for that. Philly did themselves a favor by defeating San Jose, a playoff team. And then Tampa Bay did not do themselves a favor by losing to Spokane, a close one in Death Valley. Who do you see coming out of these two? Or, you know, what do you see coming?
I've got to lean towards Philadelphia at this point. They're definitely a hot team right now. They haven't lost since their last matchup against Cleveland. They've just kind of been rolling. To beat, you know, a really good San Jose team, 42-20, to hold that offense to such a low number with Nathan Stanley, I think it's really impressive, and it shows that Philadelphia's coming through when they need to be, when they've lost some games earlier this season in the clutch. And Tampa Bay's kind of in a position where they have to win or they're out. So I think it's an easier situation for Philadelphia, but right now Philadelphia's the better team too.
Yeah,
what's really alarmed me with Tampa Bay is just protecting Randy Hippard. I mean, if you saw any of that game, he just was hit really hard. And I honestly thought he was going to be taken out of the game at one point when he threw an interception. in the back of his own end zone. He got hit really hard on the elbow, and he still came back in. So I think that Tampa Bay really struggled with just keeping him contained and keeping him protected. And really just Philly beating San Jose that dominantly, allowing only 20 points. That's just ridiculous. And San Jose,
that was the worst I've seen Nathan Stanley play thus far since taking over for Russ McKnight.
Yeah,
he just looked uncomfortable.
Yeah, they made Stanley look like the rookie that he is.
That was the first time he's looked like a rookie.
Yeah, exactly. And just San Jose was arguably one of the hottest teams in the league heading into that, just being the first team to beat Arizona, and they really did, beat them down in that matchup. And then just for Philly to beat them like that, I think they're a different team with the back against with their backs against the wall right now. So just heading down to these last couple weeks, I think there's too much that needs to happen for Tampa Bay to get that last spot. But with Philly, if let's say both teams lose, because they both have pretty tough matchups coming up, then Philly will still win. So I think just this week with Philly getting that game in hand, I think that's really given them an advantage heading into this last week.
Yeah, I think Tampa was going to hope that maybe, you know, they got Cleveland the last game of the season. Maybe Cleveland would kind of let up because they have a lot of stuff already clinched, but they don't have everything clinched.
They
don't have home field clinched, so Cleveland's definitely going to be playing that one like it's a meaningful game, which it is. And the one thing that's standing in between Philly and the playoffs is Pittsburgh. And the quarterback for that team, Tom Grady, I had a chance to sit down with him. He was able to lead Pittsburgh to their franchise's first playoff appearance. And last week, he became the 11th quarterback in pro football history to reach 500 career touchdown passes. So I talked to the newest member of the 500 Touchdown Club, and we discussed his reunion with his former head coach, Ron James, who was his coach in Utah, as well as the upcoming playoffs. So I'm here with Pittsburgh Power quarterback and 2012 league MVP, Tommy Grady, to talk about this season and the upcoming playoffs. Tommy, how's it going?
Going good. Thanks for having me on tonight.
Hey, no problem. So I'll get down to it. You know, just first off, you were reunited with your former coach in Utah, Coach Ron James, and ever since he's taken over in week two, you guys have just skyrocketed. So what works in your relationship with Coach James stemming back from your time in Utah?
Coach James, he's a great coach. He's a great leader for our team, and you know he demands respect. And I think everyone on our team respects him, and you know he's definitely a leader that we needed, and he's been doing a great job so far.
All right, okay. And so last week you reached the 500 touchdown milestone. What does it feel like to be a part of the 500 touchdown club?
It's pretty cool. I mean, there's a lot of good quarterbacks in there, and a lot of quarterbacks that played before me, so it's a pretty good honor. But our main goal is to win a championship, and you know those goals will be those will be cool down the road. But for right now, you know, winning a championship is only down on our mind.
Yeah, and you know, in your path to the championship, it's like it's most likely you're going to face Orlando in the first round, or you are going to face Orlando. And your last matchup was an instant classic. You know, it came down to the wire. You end up finding Hank Edwards in the end zone for the game-winning touchdown. Have you guys started preparing for Orlando, and what do you guys need to do to walk away with another victory against them?
Yeah, Orlando's got a really good team. Defensively, they added a couple players veteran guys that know the game, and so it's not exactly the same team we faced before. So, you know, it's going to be a tough challenge for us. I know Coach Keith's a good coach, good defensive mind. We're definitely I prepared for him on the bye week a little bit, and you know, watched some of their film. And you know, after we play Philly this week, we're definitely going to be fully focused on them. And you know, it's going to be a tough challenge for us.
Now, Coach Keith was with the coaching staff in Utah when you were there. Do you have any inside information after spending some time with Coach Keith in Utah?
No, he brings a good game plan each week. He's a very bright guy. He knows the game. He calls great defenses, and so offensively we're gonna have to change some things up, and try to beat them like that.
Okay, and then this weekend you have Philadelphia, who needs a win really to help their playoff chances. So what do you guys have to do to keep Philly out of the playoffs and win this week?
We gotta bring some more energy. I think the last couple games, our energy level really hasn't been there. But we know that we got a good Philadelphia team coming in, so I'm sure our energy level will be high, and we're playing at home, so it should help us out a little bit. But Philly's a great team. You know, their record might not show up, but you know, they're one of the better teams we played this year. So you know, we know if we don't bring the energy and bring the focus, that we're not gonna win.
Yeah. Yeah, you guys have had some great matchups this year in the Keystone Collision. All right, but Tommy, thank you. I'll let you go here, but thank you for talking with me and taking the time.
Yeah, definitely. Thanks for having me on.
All right. All right, thank you, Tommy. I'm going to bring in Connor Gomer, who's doing a story this week on the ArenaFootball.com website about the Utah Blaze coaching staff from last year. Tommy Grady was obviously a quarterback on that team. Ron James, the head coach. And then the offensive-defensive coordinators are both head coaches, the offensive coordinator being Matt Sauk, coaching the expansion Portland Thunder, and defensive coordinator Rob Keefe, coaching Orlando. So very successful coaching staff Utah had going there, as all three of those coaches are now coaching playoff teams. So, Connor, you know, you've talked with all three of these guys and working on this story. Do you feel like Keith and Sauk look to James as kind of a mentor, or vice versa? Does James look at those two as kind of a as proteges?
Well, one thing I took away from interviewing all three of them is that they're all three very, very different guys. But when they came together and they were on the same page and on the same team for the same goal, they all just jived so well with each other. And Keith and Sauk definitely took away very, very good lessons from Ron James, who is arguably one of the best coaches in the AFL right now. But one thing Ron James mentioned to me was that he's learned so much from Keith and Sauk, just coaching with them and how different they are, and just the way they approach the game, he's learned a lot from them.
So he's learning from them?
Yeah, no, definitely. He said that Rob Keefe is one of the most intense guys he's ever met, and his coaching style is very in-your-face, hyperactive. He said he's kind of like the Energizer Bunny in a way,
okay. And
that he kind of takes that away. And, you know, he's kind of like an old-school football coach, Ron James is, so he takes away from some of these young guys some lessons and how to motivate his players. And also on the other side of the ball, offensively, he learned from Matthew Sauk and his coaching style. And, you know, Sauk, he's very cool, calm, collective. He's an X's and O's guy. You know, he knows what he's doing, but he's not in your face like Keith is. And Ron James made sure to mention that he's taken away very, very important lessons from Sauk and how to prepare for each week.
Yeah, and Sauk and Keith were both players in the league, and James, who did play football in college, he did not play in the Arena League, so it's definitely a different perspective, you know, as you look at the game through a former player's eyes, as opposed to kind of just learning the game as James has. I mean, he's obviously a great football mind, but I mean, it is different from going from a player to a coach, as opposed to coming in just as a old coach. So I think he did do some coaching in college, and then he came into the Arena League, and he's had a long tenure in the AFL. So I'm sure there's always more stuff you can learn from players. Do you agree?
No, absolutely. And I think that's the biggest thing he's taken away from him, is just how to approach this unique style of football in the Arena Football League. And it's definitely helped him to coach with guys like Matthew Sauk and Rob Keefe. And we can see that in the success he's having this year with the Pittsburgh Power. So,
okay. And earlier this year, James faced off against Rob Keefe, one of his former pupils, so to speak, and James came out with a victory in a classic matchup. It came down the wire, as we mentioned earlier, 62-61, and right now, as the dust is settling with these playoff matchups, it's coming to see that Orlando and Pittsburgh are going to face in the first round. What's that matchup going to be like between the pupil and the teacher?
Oh, I mean, Ron James said that it's going to be fun. He said when they played earlier this year, he saw Rob Keefe, and it was a little strange to have him on the other side of the field there, looking mm-hmm. on him, just, you know, yelling at his team and getting everybody fired up. He said he kind of missed him in a way, you know, being by his side. But he said that they definitely had a few laughs before the game and a few comments afterwards, and he's really looking forward to this matchup coming up in the first round of the playoffs.
Okay, and Keith, as we know, he's already won an Arena Bowl coaching the Spokane Shock. They won the 2010 Arena Bowl, so he has some experience, you know, and some coaching success. So is an interesting dynamic between the two. Thank you, Connor.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, I'm going to send it over to our Jenny Reddy, who's going to update us on the weekly happenings around the league with our AFL Minute.
Here with another exciting AFL Minute, I'm Jenny Reddy. Let's talk about this week's weekly honors. Iowa Barnstormers wide receiver Darius Reynolds has been awarded Russell Athletic Offensive Player of the Week after setting a single-game franchise record with 7 touchdown receptions, while Philadelphia's sole defensive back, Rayshon Kaiser, has been awarded Rydell Defensive Player of the Week thanks to a pair of picks. And Spokane Chuck defensive back Terrence Sanders has been awarded J. Lewis Small Playmaker of the Week with a kickoff return touchdown and a pick six. In addition to these awards, the Cutter's Catch of the Week has been awarded to Spokane Chuck wide receiver Mike Washington after he flipped over the wall for a 23-yard touchdown catch. The AFL Highlight of the Week has been awarded to Philadelphia Soul fullback Derek Ross, who took a screen pass and rumbled 32 yards for a touchdown. With your AFL Minute, I'm Jenny Ruddy, keeping the best fans in sports.
Thank you, Jenny. Moving forward, we're gonna start previewing some of these playoff matchups. The one American Conference matchup that we do know will be Pittsburgh against Orlando, and I'm going to send it back over to Connor Gomer, who had a chance to sit down with the Orlando head coach, Rob Keefe, to talk about the upcoming matchup against Pittsburgh.
So the Orlando Predators clinched the South Division Championship and number two seed in the playoffs with last week's winner over the New Orleans Voodoo. This week, the Predators take on the Arizona Rattlers before their game against the Pittsburgh Power in the first round of the playoffs. Talking with me today is Coach Rob Keefe to discuss this week's matchup and how he's prepping the Predators for the playoffs. Coach, how are you doing today?
I'm doing very well. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Awesome. So how does it feel to notch one of the remaining playoff spots this year after a roller coaster season for the Predators?
Well, we're very excited. I think first and foremost, you want to make sure that you hit your goals, obviously leading up to the Arena Bowl championship. And one of our goals was to win the South Division. And it was something that hasn't been done for the Orlando Predators in a very long time, since 2006. So we're very proud that in our first year as a coaching staff, we were able to do something that hasn't been done in quite some time, but still a lot more to accomplish. But very proud of the players, especially with, you're right, a roller coaster season, a lot of things that happened behind the scenes, but the guys were able to focus up and hunker down here, and were able to focus on the future.
Great, yeah, and going to this game against Arizona, you've really clinched everything you can so far. What mentality do you have going to this game?
Well, the mentality is you always want to win, and I think you want to stay in rhythm into the playoffs. You want to make sure you play as hard as you can. The last thing you want to do is unfortunately not play hard and guys, get hurt, or, you don't put your best foot forward and you get out of rhythm. And, I think we all know in arena football, I only can put 21 guys on the field. And with only having a very limited roster, it's not like you can put backups in every position. So we have to make sure that we stay focused. Our focus is on beating Arizona. And we know that Arizona right now is fighting for home field advantage in the Arena Bowl. Well, we are too. And we realize that Spokane or Portland, if they still happen to make it into the Arena Bowl, I believe that we can do everything possible to get to the Arena Bowl ourselves. Well, it's going to come down to who has the best record. So there's always a chance that you can host out and win out in the playoffs leading up to the Arena Bowl. So we're going to play as hard as we possibly can. It's on national television. A lot of these guys are playing for future contracts at the same time. So we want to make sure that it's full steam ahead, and we want to put our best foot forward.
Awesome, yeah, and up until they played San Jose in Week 16, Arizona has kind of been the Superman of the league this year. Do you think the Sabercats and even Spokane, do you think they've revealed kind of the kryptonite of the Rattlers?
Well, I think Arizona's a great team. I think they're coached very well. I think a lot of guys have been there, done that. I mean, you got to say that with anyone that hosts the Arena Bowl for the last 2 years, but no, I think it's just a right place, right time. I think, if Arizona were to review the film as we were, I think they could nitpick and say, coulda, shoulda, woulda, or what if we done this in this particular situation. But, I think they're a great team. I think everybody has strengths. Everyone has weaknesses. I think it's just a matter of if you can expose those or not. But it's going to take everything we possibly have, not only to beat Arizona, but to beat these great teams that are representing the American Conference in the playoffs. And, I think it's a matter of us just executing and being as good as we possibly can be, regardless of who we're facing.
Okay, yeah, and the playoffs this year are kind of all the spots are really locked into place except for that last one. Taking all those teams into consideration, who do you think the number one team you guys cannot overlook in the playoffs this year is?
Well, yeah, so that's a loaded question there, because you don't want to underlook anybody, and you don't want to overlook someone. So I think right now, I think it would be fair to say, even though I'm focused on this game for Arizona, I think the number one team would be the team that we happen to be facing first, and that would be the Pittsburgh Power. And so I have no idea how this thing is going to pan out. All I know is, I can only attest for, what's going to happen in front of us. And right now, I can't think past Arizona, who we still have to play this week. And then it is only guaranteed that we will be playing Pittsburgh at home on August 3rd. So outside of that, I don't want to underlook or overlook anyone else. I don't think it's fair to say that someone is better than anyone else, because right now records don't matter. You know, you play for home field advantage, but, you know, it doesn't matter if you're 5-12 or 16-1. We're all in the same tournament. And now with this funny game we call arena football, when there's a net and there's a bar and there's all kind of crazy rules, anything can happen. So you want to make sure that you're just focused and you're putting the best guys on the field that you possibly can.
And the Orlando Predators, you guys have had some transitions at the quarterback this year with some injuries, and you guys have had some young receivers come into the Arena Football League and contribute to your team. Who do you think is going to be your big X factor in the playoffs this year? Which player do you think?
Well, I hate that I'm not giving you the answers that you want to hear, but I think the X factor is us. We look at our record right now, 10-7, obviously still have Arizona to play. There's about four games that we lost on the last play of the game, either, at our demise on defense or our misfortune of not getting the ball in the right place on offense. But two games came down to a point. Two more games came down literally within the last play, resulting in a touchdown by the other team, or not getting the play off. I mean, that, you know, we're looking at, 13-4, maybe in a 14-3 situation. So I think the biggest X factor is going to be us. And I think as long as we can control our penalties, we can control our emotions, we can control our clock management, and again, teaching the young team all these proper ways to take the steps they need to take to win football games, if we can literally hone in and understand everything that we've been teaching since day one, I think sky's the limit for this athletic group that we've put together.
All right. Well, Coach, I'd like to thank you for coming on today.
Well, I appreciate you guys. You guys do a great job, and always a pleasure talking. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely.
All right. Thanks, Connor. Coach Keefe, if anybody knows him, he's a very impassioned man. The guy can, he should have his own morning talk show and just get people ready on the drive into work. This week marks the beginning of our two-week AF Nation podcast contest, pot contest. We will be selecting one game each week for fans to guess the outcome of. As the weeks go by, the predictions will get harder and harder. Each week in the podcast, the personalities will state what they are looking for. This week, we are looking for the name of the team that the fans will think will win the matchup between the Arizona Rattlers and the Orlando Predators. So just go on our Facebook, go on our Twitter, and just tweet at us who you think is going to win this week, and they'll automatically enter you into this contest. And use the hashtag AFNationPodContest. The prize will be an Arena Bowl 27 prize theme package, which includes T-shirts, lapel pin, game program. I might even throw an autograph of myself. All predictions must be made by the day before the selected game, so in terms of this game, we'll need all predictions to come in on Friday. Must be 18 or older to enter. That's just the rules. I just follow them. But yeah, so make sure to tweet or Facebook, or I guess those would be the only two outlets, hashtag AF Nation Pod Contest with your winner of the Arizona-Orlando game. Thank you. So I'm going to bring everybody back here. I'm going to bring Connor, Mikey, Christy, and also Liz Wentz, making her podcastual debut. I don't think podcastual is a word, but podcast debut. It is now. And we're going to, last week we went over the Cutters wide receiver of the year candidates and who everybody thought that they deserves to win that. And this week we're going to go over their foils, the defensive back of the year. And we, you know, there's been a lot of great performances on many teams. We've had rookie performances. We have great defensive back performances on losing teams. So I think it's just been a great crop of guys that are all deserving of this award. I don't know what you guys think of out there. You know, after crunching the numbers, what do my analysts think of the defensive back of the year?
Well, I'm going to lead this one off here.
Alrighty.
With my guy.
Go for it.
I think Marquise Floyd deserves it. When you look at just the impact that he's had in Arizona's secondary, and that's a team that allows a lot of yards, and I know a lot of it has to do with their fast-paced offense, which kind of in theory makes their defense have to be on the field more and then allow more yards. But either way, they really depend on forcing turnovers. That's what their defense does. I mean, you look at Pittsburgh, their defense is more geared toward not allowing yards and keeping teams from having huge yardage performances. But Arizona is more about forcing turnovers. That's always been their thing. And Marquise Floyd leads the league with 13 interceptions. And he's three off of Rayshon Kaiser's record of 16 interceptions, which he's probably not going to get it in one game. But it's still an amazing feat to even have 13 right now.
Do you feel that Floyd benefits from the talent around him? Because I don't think that he's facing the top receiver every time that he lines up on the other side of the ball. I mean, he's got Jeremy Kellum, Arkeith Brown, Kerry Reed, Alan Chapman. Other guys on other teams don't have the talent that Marquise Floyd has. So do you think he's benefiting from having other guys to take the... I mean, I'm not saying that he doesn't go up against the top guys, but he doesn't face them every down as, say, maybe a Cameron McGlenn in New Orleans who doesn't have the talent around him in the secondary.
I think it goes both ways. Goes both ways. Just having that much talent around you can also take away those numbers. I think it's pretty impressive to still get 13 interceptions when he has just such talented defenders around him. Just as you said, Jeremy Kellum and Arkeith Brown, who are both also tremendous in the secondary. So I think that could also hurt him, his numbers, in a way. But I think it's also just is a testament that he's able to stand out among those guys, even though they already have such a talented secondary. And just with Arizona, as I said, it's really, really important for them to be able to force turnovers and just get that amazing offense the ball. So that's why when you're really looking at the stats, you could look at tackles, you could look at pass breakups. But interceptions, I think, in the AFL are even more important than the outdoor game. Just when you're able to change the possession and give the ball to an offense like Arizona that scores almost every time they get the ball, I think that's really
important. Yeah, I like a lot of it could be said about Nick Davila, but Arizona does lead the league in turnover margin with a plus 19 margin. Davila's obviously not throwing a lot of interceptions, which helps the defense with that statistic, but no, you're right. Outside of Floyd, who do we see out there, guys?
Well, I think it's very possible that Marquise Floyd is the number one defensive back of the year in the National Conference, but for me, I think overall in the AFL, I would have to go with Mario Norman from Cleveland. His numbers just make sense to me. He's got 91 tackles, and although those aren't as important as the interceptions are, they're still what really matters in the AFL, getting those stops. He's only one behind, but, I mean, we've seen it before where he has done four interceptions in one game. Also, the awards don't lie. He got the Rydell Defensive Player in Week 3. He's also was voted AFL MVP in Week 19. He's definitely one of those players that stands out. And for him to stand out on the Gladiators field with all the talent around him definitely says a lot about his athleticism.
Kind of the same thing with Marquise Floyd. He's got a lot of talent around him, but no, you're right. He definitely puts up some great numbers. Obviously, we all know of Cleveland's track record with close games, and Dorman's definitely come up big in some of those games. But I think he could fall into the category like Marquise Floyd of having a lot of talent around him, just benefiting from that because he doesn't have to go up against those top guys every week, and that grows tiresome after a while having to face the Marco Thomases and Rod Windsor, even though they haven't faced Arizona this year. But you get what I'm saying.
I definitely agree with you, Chris. I mean, if you look at Cleveland, you look at Cleveland secondary, and you look at Arizona secondary, they're just surrounded by talent. And if you look at my guy, Rayshon Kaiser, out of Philadelphia.
Your guy?
Yeah, my guy.
Your horse.
Yeah, my boy over there.
Alrighty.
I'm going to give him my vote just because while he does have fewer interceptions than those guys, he only has 9. He has put up 34 pass breakups. So, I mean, he is causing turnovers and he's getting stops.
Well, I'd like to throw out another name, Farmistoni from Portland. This year he is a rookie and he's on a brand new expansion team, but he has put up pretty great numbers. 85 tackles, 25 pass breakups, 9 interceptions, and that's in the midst of another strong secondary that Portland's had. While they do have some penalty problems, they are impressive on the defensive side, and Varma definitely qualifies as a Rookie of the Year candidate, I believe. So I think he definitely deserves to be talked about. Maybe not the top candidate out of these group of people, but I think he deserves to be mentioned.
All right, and he's another one of those guys just kind of growing in front of our eyes, and
yeah.
I think he's definitely benefited from a veteran guy like Eric Crocker in that secondary. It may be a tough sell for Varmastoni, but I mean, regardless, he's going to be up there for Rookie of the Year. In recent weeks, he's been putting up some great numbers.
Right.
I think more than anything, we think you got to look at the future. That this year, it's unlikely that he would win it, but. Being a rookie and doing what he's done, I think you look towards the future, and some of the guys on these lists are pretty old and getting up there in age. So I think when you look at him, he could be maybe a future winner of this award, and what he's done so far has been amazing in Portland. So I think with him, you just got to look at the future, and it's definitely been a good start for him, and he'll be a key to if Portland does upset Arizona.
We were talking about the fearlessness of Portland against Arizona last week, and I think Varmastoni really exemplified that. He put up seven. He led the team in tackles with seven tackles and had two pass breakups and was kind of going up against those Arizona receivers like no big deal.
Right.
Rod Windsor, I don't care who you are. Tyson Poots, I don't care. Yeah, and I mean you got to have that mentality. You got to think like I'm better than you. And I think for Armisoni, you know, the confidence is definitely building. It's been a year long process.
Yeah, definitely a year of growth, and I'm excited to see where he goes next year.
Other potential candidates for the Defensive Back of the Year, we'll be remiss if we don't mention Kelvin Rogers out in San Antonio is putting together a great season. That's a guy who is not benefiting from talent around him in the secondary, and he's facing the number one guy every week in and week out, and he's still posting great numbers and being able to shut guys down. He has 15 pass breakups to go along with 11 interceptions. And another guy in that same mold would be Cameron McGlenn over in New Orleans. New Orleans has been dealing with a lot of injuries on both sides of the ball, but McGlenn's been their one constant in that secondary. Leads the team in tackles and 96.5 tackles to go along with 15 pass breakups and 11 interceptions as well. Now, looking ahead to Week 20, we have another full slate of games, all of which will be played on Saturday, July 26th, the first of which will be the Keystone Collision. Huge game in terms of playoff implications. We've got Philly traveling across the state to Pittsburgh. That game will be on at 5 o'clock Eastern. It could be seen on ESPN3. We'll have Arizona at Orlando, a rematch of Arena Bowl 8 and a couple of playoff teams this year. Going on at 7 o'clock Eastern, that game can be seen on CBS Sports Network. We have LA traveling to Jacksonville, 7 o'clock Eastern. Another game with playoff implications, Cleveland at Tampa Bay, 7:30 Eastern time. And then we have San Antonio at New Orleans, a couple young teams that are still trying to figure it out, 8 o'clock Eastern. And then our late games, we've got San Jose at Iowa, 8 o'clock, or 8:05 actually, Eastern Standard Time. And then the last game of the week, Spokane at Portland, another game featuring two current playoff teams. That game can be seen at 10 o'clock Eastern or 7 o'clock Pacific Time. With all these games coming up, we've got some great storylines. I think first off, we got a really interesting facet dynamic to this Cleveland-Tampa Bay game because, as we mentioned earlier, Cleveland still hoping to clinch that Arena Bowl home field advantage because if our listener's not sure, Cleveland is in the driver's seat. If they can knock off Tampa Bay, they would lock up the Arena Bowl as well as the single-season record for regular season wins in league history. But Tampa, as we all know, they need this win or they're eliminated from the playoffs. So, I don't know, Christy, who do you think wants it more, Cleveland, Tampa Bay? It's an interesting game, you know?
I would have to say maybe Tampa Bay at this point. You know, this is a desperation game for them. They lose and they're out. So I've got to say that they probably want it more, but that being said, Cleveland still has a lot of stake in this game. And while sometimes it kind of appears like it might be a lose-lose scenario for Cleveland, like they win to get home field, but then they get Philadelphia. They lose,
they might lose home field.
You know, and they might still get Philadelphia. So, you know, it'll be interesting, but I've got to say Tampa Bay wants it.
It's like running down on Christmas morning and not getting what you wanted.
Right. They might not get what they want either way.
Yeah, I think when you look at it, there's a huge difference between fighting for the playoffs and then just fighting for playoff positioning. And as much as it would be great for Cleveland to be able to host the Arena Bowl if that happened, it's still a game that's – I mean, you're talking about Tampa Bay where they are win or go home. It's that simple. So I think there's going to be a lot more desperation coming from Tampa Bay. They're going to want a lot more than Cleveland will. So I think that there is a huge difference just between, okay, we want to host the Arena Bowl. It'd be nice to have the most regular season wins in AFL history compared to a team that literally will be going home and watching the playoffs from their own homes if they don't win this game.
Yeah, I see, you know, Coach Lawrence Samuel is a storm. I see him getting his guys to amp for this game. They're definitely going to come out hungry. But, I mean, yeah, you're right. You know, it's almost like you're getting a little too greedy with it. Like, you've already put together a great season. You don't want to play around with that too much or, you know, you start losing focus on what's most important, and that's getting to the Arena Bowl, whether it's in Cleveland or not.
Right.
And, yeah, Cleveland's been winning on the road all season, so really that shouldn't even be something they're worrying about that much. As much as Cleveland is tremendous home field advantage with them being third in average attendance right now, so that is a huge advantage for them. But at the same time, they've won on the road all season, so I think it's not a deal breaker for them. They still have every bit of a chance to reach the AFL championship, even if they won't have home field.
Having the Arena Bowl in Cleveland would be the cherry on top of this unreal sports summer for Cleveland. You got Johnny Football, LeBron James, and then top it all off, Arena Bowl.
Yeah. I'm working on a feature about just sort of all the things that have happened in Cleveland this summer, and it'll be coming out next week, and it's something that's really been amazing for them, and it's really looks like it's going to continue happening.
Yeah. You know, if you wait long enough, good things will happen.
Yeah, I guess.
I mean, if it gets in terms of Cleveland, they've had to wait some time for that.
Right.
Now, moving forward, I'm going to bring Mikey back here. He's working on a story this week on talking about the Keystone Collision. Do you feel like Pittsburgh can keep their winning streak alive and keep their in-state rivals out of the playoffs? Philly hasn't missed the playoffs since 2011.
Yeah, I mean, this is a huge game for both teams. I mean, when you talk about the Keystone Collision, it doesn't matter if Pittsburgh already has their playoff spot determined. It's still a huge game. Just talking to Ron James, he spoke of how it's just so huge for the city and just this rivalry, and that they've had this turnaround season has been so great for the organization and their fan base. They're not going to stop now going against Philly, and he sort of said it either way, whether it's at Philly or it's at Pittsburgh, we're at Pittsburgh now, but the Keystone Collision, the fans are always rowdy and really into it, and he said they give a lot of problems to the opposing team, so it should be interesting. And talking to Lirico Stevenson of Philly, he actually played for Pittsburgh for part of 2011 and 2012, so he was kind of on both sides of it, and he said it was just an outstanding rivalry. The games are always fun, and he of course said, I mean, the words he used for me is that they're scratching from the bottom and trying to make it to the top, so there's going to be a little bit more sense of urgency for Philly just given the situation, but I think either way it's a huge game for both teams. It always is with the Keystone Collision.
Yeah, this could be Pittsburgh's first season sweep of Philadelphia in their franchise's history, and that's, you know, prideful. It's a pride thing at that, you know.
Yeah, that's the interesting thing is that Philadelphia is the more storied franchise, having reached the Arena Bowl for back-to-back seasons and winning it in 2008. And now, all of a sudden, Pittsburgh is the team that's won 11 in a row, which is the most in franchise history. So they've kind of sort of switched roles a little bit. So it's kind of interesting that Pittsburgh is the team now that kind of has the upper hand. Right now it's 4-4 in the series. This is the ninth game, so it'll kind of be the tiebreaker. So it'll be interesting to see who comes out on top.
Seismic shift from West Pennsylvania to East Pennsylvania. I don't know if anybody felt that during the season, but I kind of felt it. All right, thank you, Mikey. And just a couple reminders for this week. We have our Net 10 Wireless Arena Football Saturday on CBS Sports Network. A couple classic AFL franchises as Arizona travels to Orlando. As I said, that game is at 7 o'clock Eastern, CBS Sports Network. And make sure to vote on arenafootball.com for the Arena Football Hall of Fame Class of 2014. Voting closes on Friday. There are 10 finalists right now. And then whoever makes it out from those 10 finalists, whenever that's narrowed down, that will be announced the weekend of the Arena Bowl. Interact with other AFL diehards on the AF Nation message board on our website. Comment on our articles, comment on the press releases, ask us questions, anything that's going around with the Arena Football League community. I want to thank everyone, all my correspondents, experts, analysts, Mikey Wansifer, Connor Gomer, Christy Rose, The Young Gun, Liz Wentz. Thank you, Tommy Grady, for coming on. Coach Rob Keefe, really appreciate them taking the time to talk with us. And I want to thank all of our listeners out there and all of our fans for watching week in and week out. It's been another great season here at the Arena Football League, 27th season. Wouldn't be 27 years without those guys, so thank you. And just keep chasing your dreams. I'm Chris Hopkins.